everybody. Happy Friday. This is Trevin McGee from the Scene Stealers podcast. I'm here with Eric Moline.
Hi there, Trevin.
How are you, pal?
I'm swell.
Good. And we are absent one Trey Hawk through no fault of his own. But
he just didn't see the movie we're talking about this week.
He didn't see the movie. And we're only talking about one movie this week, and that is Salmon Fishing in Yemen. No, it's The Hunger Games. And if you don't know anything about this movie or if you're unfamiliar with it, you are a fictitious person because it's everywhere. It's literally everywhere.
Nice job, Lionsgate.
Yeah, I'll give them that. They know how to market a movie, John Carter. So we might as well just get to it. I mean, it's kind of...
Let's mention up front that we want to talk about The Hunger Games, but we're going to talk about three or four movies that preceded The Hunger Games that have similar setups as well.
Yeah, that's the one extra thing we'll add to this.
Yeah.
But it's all Hunger Games today. It's the first of a trilogy of movies based on a trilogy of books by Suzanne Collins. And it stars Jennifer Lawrence and a bunch of other young kids that you probably haven't heard of or seen in other things. Liam Hemsworth, Chris Hemsworth, Thor's brother. Josh Hutcherson is Peter Mallark. And then you don't really need to get into the rest of them because they're kind of forgettable.
Well, Josh Hutcherson is notable because he was really great in The Kids Are All Right.
Yeah, he was.
And then he's in those Journey movies, which is whatever. I liked him a lot when he was really young in this little scene film that Who's His Teeth did? Jon Favreau? Zathura?
Oh, right. Yeah, Zathura.
Yeah. And that was a pretty great movie. And that also had Kristen Stewart in it. Mm-hmm. So poop to everybody who doesn't think Kristen Stewart's any good.
Yeah, no kidding. So the story is essentially, it's a fictitious place called Pan Am. It's set in some undisclosed time, but they have futuristic technology at their disposal. And what happens is there's this large metropolitan capital city. It's full of this almost aristocratic upper class. And then there are these districts that lay on the fringe, that lay outside of this capital city. And they're more poor, downtrodden. They do a lot of the work, coal mining, things like that. And I guess a long time ago, 74 years ago, there was an uprising. The districts tried to rise against the capital and were quickly put down, or maybe not quickly, but they were put down. And then as penance, they have to do this thing called the Hunger Games every year. What that is that each district has to offer a boy and a girl between the ages of 12 and 18 to fight in an arena, basically. It looks like a wilderness, but it's just a domed arena that these people have full control over. They can, it's almost like producers on the Truman Show. They can add trees and natural disasters. They can change the seasons. They can make it day when it's night. They can make it night when it's day. They can do whatever they want. And the idea is that they have to, these tributes, as they're called, they have to kill each other until one is left, and then the winner gets that their district gets additional food and resources throughout the year.
The one thing I didn't actually mention in my review that I thought was interesting is that you have a greater chance of being picked for this unfortunate game if you receive more aid as a person.
Right.
So the main character, played by Jennifer Lawrence, Katniss Everdeen, mm-hmm. Says to her younger sister as she takes the bullet, so to speak, and volunteers herself when her younger sister's name is chosen. Mm-hmm. She says, "Don't take any food from them. It's not worth getting your name put in there more."
Yeah.
As she's leaving to go to the games, and I thought that it was a very clever, probably the most clever little piece of satire in the entire movie, because especially with the Tea Party and the anti-government type things that are being put forth by the Republicans right now. I thought that was a really funny way of taking Grover Norquist to a new level. So that I enjoyed. Unfortunately, I don't think that the movie is full of as much smart satire as that for the rest of the film.
No, and I think you read into that. I think that was your read on it. I don't think that was intentional bit of satire at all. The thing I was going to say about it after that quick summary is just most of that. I mean, if you've read the books, you know that automatically.
Have you read the books?
No.
Okay. I haven't either.
But the thing is, if you watch the movie, it's kind of hard to fill in a lot of those gaps. There's context clues, there's bits and pieces, but, you know, I got everything that I just said from the movie. I intentionally didn't go back and read it. I didn't try and do any homework before I saw it, because here's the thing. I really think that books like this, and or movies, adaptations like this, and the Twilight series, and to an extent Harry Potter as well, and in some
definitely
cases,
I would include Harry Potter.
And in some
this.
Cases they have to, but in those examples, they really expect the viewer to bring a certain level of understanding and emotional investment
correct.
Into the movie for in order for them to work.
Yep.
And that's my biggest problem with The Hunger Games.
That's a great point. I love
that
point.
That's my biggest problem, is that there's a lot here, but you're really going to get the most out of it if you've read and appreciate the books beforehand. And because I hadn't, the movie doesn't do a good enough job on its own of making...
It doesn't earn it.
No, it doesn't earn it, and it's emotional. I feel like it doesn't have any sort of emotional soul to it without bringing in extra character appreciation and sort of emotional baggage, basically, from having read the books. I didn't care about anybody. I didn't care about anybody at all. And by the end of the movie, I was rooting for the savage dogs.
I would argue with that only on in respect to Jennifer Lawrence's character. I think they did a great job setting her up in her district before she goes up for the Hunger Games. And I thought that as an actress, that she did a terrific job of internalizing everything. And because the film is from her point of view, I think that we get a very clear picture of who she is. And so I actually was rooting for her. But I agree with you on everything else that you said, because I feel that the mythology of this world is not as fleshed out as it should be.
Yeah, you hardly get the name of the place.
Yeah.
They don't even, I mean, and part of that,
look it
part
up.
Of that's
I
cool.
Remember
yeah.
that from the movie.
Yeah, part of that's cool because, I mean, they are interested in telling their own story.
Right.
So they're not going to have, like, a little shot or an opening sort of, kind of like that long crawl at the beginning of Dune that explains, like,
or the
minutes.
Intro to John Carter.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, like, they don't have a crawl like that or an explanation. But at the same time, like, I don't know if it necessarily needed it, but it needed something.
Well, it needed to expand on more of its supporting characters, in my opinion.
That's the other thing. Josh Hutcherson, I thought, was just kind of a dead fish. I wanted to like him a lot, and his character doesn't ever really get to do much of anything. And they gloss over some major connections and some sort of betrayals and then counter betrayals and backstabs once they're in the actual games, and that doesn't really get explained. It gets just kind of glossed over. That's the other thing, is that I guess the book is all written from her perspective.
Right, and the movie tries to do that as well.
It tries to do that, but there's not... You miss a certain level of understanding and explanation.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I was going to complain about is just that...
You complainer.
I'm a big complainer, but I feel like I have a lot to complain about with this one. Another big complaint for me was, you know, and part of this is because I've seen enough movies to just, I'm an experienced movie viewer, but it also, it's true of people who've read these books. We know that this doesn't spoil anything. We know that she's going to survive because there's three books
or three movies
and
coming
three
out,
movies.
Sure.
Yeah. So we're aware that she's going to survive.
Right.
There's a huge installed audience that's already read the books.
Correct.
So they know pretty much, like, they know the song and dance of what's going to happen. There might be some liberties, but based on how faithful this one was, it's not likely that they're going to do a big surprise and make, you know, kill a major character that didn't die in the book or do something like that. Especially not the star. So here's the thing. When it's a movie about survival and you know the main character is not in danger of not surviving, she's in no danger, you have to have something else anchor the movie. You have to have some stronger relationship or some interaction. There has to be something else that invests you in these characters. You know, it's not fair, in a way, it's not fair to compare it, but you look at the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
It certainly is.
And you know that Frodo's going to drop the ring. You know how that movie's going to end within the first hour.
But
you know how the trilogy's going to end.
Filmmaker.
It's a more skilled filmmaker. It's a stronger script. But more importantly, it's a script that knew when to stick to the source material and when to jettison stuff in favor of a better movie.
And there were plenty of things to jettison because The Lord of the Rings were so... Those books were so enormously...
Right.
filled with detail, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you had to get rid of some of the mythology, keep the stuff that mattered, that deepened the story.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and I totally agree with
you. And so with this, I mean, I think they were a little too faithful. I think they glossed over some major relationships, and I think they really depended on the audience to fill in a lot of gaps and bring a lot of emotional depth to these characters that wasn't on screen if you weren't a fan of the books or had read them.
Yeah.
And so with all that in mind, like I was really disappointed with it on a storytelling level. From a technical perspective, I think it's fantastic. I mean, chime in or interrupt me whenever you want. I feel like I'm talking the whole thing, but I thought the costume design was outstanding. The set design is great. I really like how they handled the special effects on the battlefield or on the game board or whatever you want to call it. There is some savvy commentary on reality TV and sort of that look at me culture. Not enough. There's one scene, it's used as a throw-off scene, and it's one of the few a little emotional telling points in the movie is when Woody Harrelson's character is the only person from their district that's ever won the Hunger Games, Katniss and PETA's district 13, I think. I can't remember.
12,
District 12, sorry. And there's a scene, he's a drunk and he's just not, he's probably got some PTSD because he was, killing kids when he was,
a kid.
18, yeah.
Yeah.
But he's at a bar in the Capitol and he looks over and there's a aristocratic family playing and one of the little kids has a sword and he's pretending to kill his sister because he's just playing, because it's just a game to him. It's something he'll never have to worry about or encounter in his own life. You know, he'll never have to be in the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
And he sees that and is disgusted by it, and it's a five-second scene.
There should have been way more of that stuff.
And I really liked that.
Yeah.
And I liked that a lot. And you know, like, they don't really focus a lot on how out of water she and PETA are in the city. I mean, you get sort of that, wow, look at me, like, cow-eyed, I can't believe the city's like this.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't focus enough on sort of the class differences or a lot of, what's going on there, how sick it is. That was the other thing that bothered me, was all of the major actors in the games look older and act older, and so they feel like full-blown adults.
Right.
And it kind of cheapens.
Except for the few that are actually visibly
children.
Very young.
Yeah.
They're children. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you've got this cast of tributes that are brutalizing and murdering their other tributes.
Right.
But they look like adults.
Right.
So it kind of glosses over how sick the games are, in that, they're from the ages of 12 to 18.
I wouldn't say they look like adults, but I would say that some of them behaved a little bit more maturely, and I think that was because, from talking to people who've read the books, that some of the districts breed people to do this.
Yeah, districts 1 and 2, I think.
Yeah, and I think a lot more backstory like that would have helped, because I think not knowing the other tributes makes this a less effective movie.
Yeah.
And I think that it's interesting that they tried to stick with her POV, but I think in some respects not doing that made the story less emotional and less effective, because when people start killing each other in Battle Royale and in Series 7, the Contenders, which we'll talk about a little bit later, it matters,
yeah.
Right? Those deaths hurt. They are we know enough about every one of those backstories that we feel something when those people die, or they have relationships to other people.
Right.
And so I think in the big world of, mythological fictional books and trilogies and superheroes, even, you'll notice that some of the most effective ones involve relationships that are personal. And in this movie, the only personal relationship that we have is problematic, because Jennifer Lawrence's character is learning to work it. She's been told by Woody Harrelson, her mentor, that she needs to perform for the camera and get sponsors. This really isn't explored, other than the fact that she gets a couple parachutes from help from the outside world. But we know that she is playing the game better than Josh Hutcherson's character, who we wonder whether or not they're, quote, relationship is all for the camera, or whether she's actually feeling something. And this is going to become the central theme of the next film or couple films, from what I've been led to believe. but I didn't think that they managed that well in this movie. And I think that it was problematic. As much as I liked the art direction and costume design, showing the people from District 12 as these Depression-era, you know, poor people in the coal mine, straight out of like a Dorothea Lange photo essay. You know, we've and then these cartoonish rich people with these bright clothing.
Yeah, that was amazing. They,
straight out of Brazil,
so,
honestly.
Yeah, and then also I had flashes of Fahrenheit 451 with the guards.
Yeah,
the
this
guards.
Was a very 70s design, futuristic 70s design.
Yeah.
But it's problematic, and the reason is that we don't we're some of the rich people's characters, some of the wealthy people's characters have to become sympathetic. Slightly sympathetic towards the end of this movie for it to work,
right.
And that just isn't possible. It doesn't. Because there's not enough time for those characters to develop, so they just turn on a dime.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the film, I feel like we are meant to know more about how these games are manipulated, and I was left wondering whether the audience knows that this is manipulated or not. I don't think that was clear either.
No.
Does the audience know that they can create certain things and push people in certain directions, like you mentioned, like in the Truman Show, or not? Anyway, by the end of the film, as you said before, you know that certain characters are not going to perish, mm-hmm. and something's got to happen because certain people have signed on for more than one film. And then it becomes a thing where the rules of the game change. And I think that maybe perhaps in the book it was more dramatic. In the movie, the way it is portrayed, it seems like an easy way out.
It's just convenient.
And it's completely arbitrary. They try to make something of it. Donald Sutherland, who's the president, who, by the way, is completely underused and not evil or effective at all.
He'll be a bigger part.
Yeah, later. But I mean, right now, it wasn't working. He says, don't give them too much hope. He says that to Wes Bentley's character, who's kind of running the games. Don't give them too much hope. Well, it seems like he might have. So they try to change the game, and then something happens, and I can't believe that in 74 years that nobody has ever thought to do this. 74 years of oppression, and nobody has ever thought to rebel in this way. And then a voice comes on again and changes the rules again. And
sorry.
It's like, you know, if you've already set this up where this kind of thing can happen, I'm not going to be concerned about anybody ever.
That's the thing, is it's convenient, and it kind of, it speaks more to problems with the book and the overall story than it does the movie, but yeah, it's convenient. I mean, and honestly, so is the sponsorship thing. It's an easy way to injure or endanger a character, but then have an out so that they're okay.
Yeah,
like give them a way to be okay in the long run. So I mean, it's convenient, and I think it's more a sign of a weak story than
I didn't hate this movie. I gave it a minor rock fist down on the website, and I know that you and I are in the minority on this.
Oh, totally.
Yesterday.
It had a 90% freshness rate before Wednesday when we saw it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're talking about Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I don't know where it's at now, but it was at 90% as of halfway through the week.
And I feel that this is going to get the same sort of backlash that you get, or I'm going to get, when I post a negative Harry Potter review.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But the thing is it has some of the very similar, some of the same problems as the Harry Potter stuff, because I feel, once again, like I'm not watching a complete film, but rather the Cliff's Notes version of something that has more detail and has a better realized set of characters, and in a rush to get this done in 2 hours and 20 minutes, might I add, which feels at certain points every second.
Oh yeah, I mean, it was dragging. Yeah. It was dragging. I kept wondering when it was going to be over. And the problem with that is like that by the time you get to the games, you're almost fatigued anyway. And then the pace of the games is so
wonky.
Yeah, it's a clunky pace for that entire survival thing. So by the end, like, I was just fatigued. I was just kind of done by the time it was over with.
Like I said,
I was rooting for the dogs. I really was. I was really just like, just kill these fucking kids so
there's
I can get
certain,
home.
There's certain, just the whole premise, though, is very easy to get into. And I think having that framework right there is what a lot of people are reacting to. Whereas in some of the Harry Potter films, it seems like the conflict was way more esoteric.
Yeah.
In this one, it's not. And so But boy, what a way to bungle the ending. I just really thought after all this buildup that it was going to come to something more than what we what we got in the wilderness there at the end.
Yeah.
So yeah, again, I didn't hate the Hunger Games. I'm actually looking forward to the next one. I think that having this one under their belt will make the next one probably a little better because we'll have that character development.
Yeah.
Maybe this should have been a miniseries. We've talked about that with films before.
Yeah, I actually had that thought while I was watching. It was like, you know, that like it's PG-13. It's not that violent, partially so it can stay PG-13.
Yep.
You know, it could actually have worked really well on a network. Yeah, on a cable network. It probably could have worked really well on that. But
so what's your
Down the same as you, man. Mine are Rock Fist Down.
Oh, that's depressing.
I know.
We have the same.
I know. Well, I can't give it a full-blown like solid Rock Fist Down because the production's too great. The production design, sound editing, visual effects, from a production level, it's a solid film.
Yeah.
But when it comes to performances and story, it's a minefield.
A minefield. Ooh, nice.
Yeah. So I don't know. I was and you know, it wasn't intended to be a pun, but someone was asking me about it last night. And the thing about it is
pun alert.
Yeah, pun alert. Here it comes. But there's just because I never felt like anyone was at risk, no one has any skin in the game.
Yeah.
There's nothing to lose.
Any skin in the game.
Anyway, so
I'll laugh.
Yeah, go for it. So let's move on, though. Let's talk about, you know, some people. There's always, whenever a popular book gets adapted or something like that, there are always people who come out and say, oh, this is just based on this. Or, oh, this is really just a, you know, I liked it better when it was called Battle Royale, or I liked it better when it was this. There are definitely some movies or some books that have explored similar themes to what the Hunger Games explores.
Let's go back to the first one, then.
So let's do. Let's go back.
The Most Dangerous Game is a book that came out in the 20s, and it was adapted. It was a short story, actually.
Yeah.
Adapted in 1932 by the same team that did King Kong. This actually came out right before King Kong did, and it's about a big game hunter who lures people to an island and hunts them down.
Yeah.
And
Eric.
What's that?
Man is the most dangerous game.
Yeah, there you go. And you know, I did actually see this film a while back. It is effective. It's obviously a movie from the 30s. It's pre-code, so they can get away with a lot more. But that's basically the origin of this kind of story. And it's definitely worth a rent, although you'll probably find that much of the same things that we said in this one, as far as there being a lot of danger, whether somebody's going to live or die. In the 30s, we run into the same thing.
Yeah.
But Battle Royale is a Japanese film that that you're going to talk about.
A little bit. I'm going to need your help because it's been a while since I've seen it. But Battle Royale is this great Japanese movie about some high school kids, a bunch of Japanese high school kids that get sort of sent to an island where they're on a televised kill or be killed TV show. It's a contest. And where the Hunger Games kind of plays it safe and keeps firmly in that PG-13 zone. Battle Royale is a hard R. Battle Royale is a violent, bloody, awesome cult Japanese movie. It's 12 years old at this point. And it's actually based on a novel by the same name. Actually, you know, it's important to note almost every example we have except for Series 7 is based on a book. I don't know. It was really popular in Japan, which, you know, draw whatever conclusion you want from that statistic. But I don't know. I just really can't get into it enough. I really liked just how you talk about how there was no one at risk or major characters weren't at risk in the Hunger Games. That is not the case in Battle Royale.
Yeah,
Battle Royale, like there, anyone's fair game, and I don't know. I really like.
And speaking of one of the plot points that really bugged me about this one, in this particular movie, almost every different moral dilemma that you can think of is explored, including the option of suicide, of killing yourself, which In the Hunger Games, I'm not going to spoil anything, but not dealt with effectively there. So another film, Battle Royale came out in 2000. Another film, Series 7, The Contenders, came out in 2001. I have a list of overlooked movies that I made many years ago, and this was the number one movie on that list for me.
Yeah.
Series 7 came out in 2001, and it was produced and put together by Daniel Minahan, who at the time was working in reality TV. And he put this film together to be a satire of reality TV. So there's a TV show called The Contenders, where six people picked at random from this lottery are each given a gun and forced to hunt and kill each other for the cameras. This happens in the real world. So we're watching this stuff go down, but they're also happening, you know, they're not in some sort of controlled environment. They're just out there doing it.
Yeah.
And it's anybody. So you've got a 57-year-old emergency room nurse, a married artist, an asbestos remover, a 72-year-old man, an 18-year-old student, and our main character, Brooke Smith, who you may remember from being down in the well in The Silence of the Lambs,
who
is pregnant.
Forget.
Yeah. And so, but this movie is R. It has a lot of, it's low budget and it has a lot of handheld camera work, kind of like the beginning, especially the beginning of this movie did, of The Hunger Games. But what it really does is the plot goes into some really interesting places. You feel each one of the deaths, and when it gets down to, you know, the matter of survival versus the entertainment factor for everybody else, it has some actual interesting things to say and explores an ending that I had not come up with. And in that way, I think it feels way more satisfying. It's certainly anticlimactic for the people watching, but for us, it's very dramatic. And I still, to this day, do not know why more people don't talk about this film. Series 7.
If they haven't seen it.
The Contenders. But yeah, and you know what? I think it might even only be available on DVD. I don't even know if it's out on Blu-ray. I know it had almost no distribution, but
yeah.
Definitely worth checking out.
You will score a million indie cred points if you, yeah. And it's triple indie cred point weekend. So.
Okay, well, I just think you should see it because it's a great movie. And then, of course, you know, there's The Running Man.
The Running Man. And it's more than just a hammer dance. It's one of my favorite 80s idiotic action movies. Stars Arnold Schwarzenegger. And, it's just... It's such
based on a Stephen King short story, right?
Barely. I mean, it's based on a Richard Bachman short story.
Sure. His pen name.
Yeah, his pen name. And actually, well, I'll talk about the Bachman book in a second, but maybe now's a good time. The Bachman book is way more dire and has almost nothing to do with the movie aside from the character's name and the title of the book.
Nice.
And yeah, it's great.
What about the premise?
No. What happens in the book is one of my favorite things about the book is it kind of foreshadows a lot of reality TV and a lot of stuff that happens on The Hunger Games in a way. What happens is it's a sort of, again, dystopian future. You've got these major corporations and television companies and so forth that have huge control over the general populace. And one of the ways that you get money, he's got a daughter who's sick, the main character. Has a daughter who's sick, and
yep.
He volunteers to he decides to volunteer to make sure that she's well. He's got a wife too, and they're just kind of poor and destitute, and they can't get ahead. And
but in The Running Man, they're all criminals, right?
No,
okay.
Movie,
I'm talking about the movie.
Oh, the movie. Yeah. Well, okay. So the book is it's just an average dude that goes and volunteers,
right.
And then the game he. It's a globe-trotting game. There's not an arena. It's him going all over the world. He has to survive.
Wow.
And they send death squads after him, and he just has to be on the run the whole time. So he's changing his identity. He's hiding. He's stowing away on planes and doing all this kind of stuff. That's what he's got to do.
So it's more Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, right. So, it's this big globe-trotting sort of survival game. The movie is this giant game show. The movie is
right.
This giant absurd game show with guys like Jesse Ventura as some of the sort of boss characters. I mean, it's a lot like a video
game.
It's
like American Gladiators, yeah. But fight to the death. Yeah. Richard Dawson is the host.
Richard Dawson's the host, and that's awesome. Yeah. The way that he gets killed is awesome. And it's just a Schwarzenegger action vehicle where he just kind of runs around, mugs at the camera, kills people, breaks guys' backs. Like, towards the end of the movie, he gets a gun and just slaughters, like, 50 people on the way to the main television station.
Correct me if I'm wrong. After seeing this when I was a kid, I seem to remember a fairly high level of satire, though. Like, I remember there being a lot of moments where it was pretty obvious that they were going outside of the normal realm of an action movie, even if it was played for comedy.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's absolutely absurd. It's an absurd show, and I mean, when there are motor psychos, guys driving around with chainsaws mounted on their motorcycles, that's pretty amazing. You know, there's some great just sort of dated 80s action cheese here, yeah. And you get your Schwarzenegger one-liners.
I think that Gary Ross, the guy who directed The Hunger Games, would have also done well to include more bloodlust mm-hmm. on the part of the wealthy people watching. I feel that we don't get enough of their reaction to what's happening because of it all being from Katniss's point of view. So that's another thing. More bloodlust from the bad guys would have made this more effective as well, I think.
Yeah, they gloss over a lot of stuff.
That point of view, I really think it's a problem. I really do. I don't think it provides a wider perspective, and I think that kind of hurt the film. So it'll be interesting to see what they do in the future.
Yeah, I agree. I hope the second movie, you know, I basically agree with everything you said about the second movie. Hopefully, you know, they bank on the sort of established characters and spend more time trying to tell an actual story. And there's going to be a lot to deal with in the second movie anyway, with a whole rebellion, and she kind of becomes a political leader in a way. And, you know, there's a lot more to it.
How do you know all this?
I don't know. I'm an oracle.
Well, there it is, kids. So, the Hunger Games.
You've already seen it.
Yeah.
So I hope you enjoyed it more than we did.
Do we still have the Scene Stealers number? Can people still dial in and, like, tell us things?
No.
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 Okay. Well, don't call us and don't tell us what you think of this podcast.
Don't do that.
No, actually, we've cut all that out. But leave to all Scene Stealers podcast listeners, leave us a comment on our webpage. Let us know what you thought of The Hunger Games. I know that Trevin and I are in the minority, and because I am, I'm wondering why I am. I'd like to actually hear other people talk about why they like this film
and
so much.
The super fans got to see it last night. Yeah. I mean, they even did pre-midnight screenings last night. So if you've got it and you can't get enough Hunger Games and you can't understand why some Philistine like me didn't enjoy it.
Last thing.
Let me know.
My other theory about this film is that maybe the reason that it's getting good reviews is because people don't dislike it. In other words, there's a difference between a positive score on Rotten Tomatoes and a movie that a lot of people really loved.
Right.
And if this movie gets a 3 out of 4 rating or a 2.5 out of 4 rating from a ton of critics, then it gets this 90% fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes, when in reality, a lot of critics just thought it was passable. So I have not read anybody else's reviews, but it would be interesting. I'm going to try to see if there is a lot of passion out there for this film or if people are saying, oh, it didn't suck, which is essentially what I'm saying, but I'm still not recommending it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at it right now. It's got an 87% freshness rate with critics and a 95% freshness rate with viewers.
Right. Well, I'm just saying. So now we have to go through each one of those and see how you know much they loved it. If it was just a barely recommended film or what? Because as long as it's a positive rating, that's the same score as if they would have given it 4 stars.
Yeah.
Right. So a 2.5 is the same as a 4-star review when you add it all up and look at the freshness rating, so to speak. So again, the dangers of critical consensus. It could look like everybody really loves this movie when in fact people just don't hate it.
All right.
And that's where I'm going
to
end it.
Let's end it right there. All right. So if you're going to the Comic-Con this weekend, it's a big Planet Comic-Con this weekend, say hi to Lando Calrissian for me. I'm not going to be going.
What about EJO?
No.
No?
Don't say hi to
EJO.
I have the Blade Runner special edition that came in the case.
Oh,
like
yeah.
The big case. And I almost gave it to someone to see if he would sign it while it was there. But
usually don't you have to buy something there for them
I
to
know.
Sign it?
Yeah. That's why I didn't.
Yeah.
Anyway, have a good weekend, everybody. We'll be back next week.
Cheers.